Yesterday, Todd McShay mocked Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields to the Panthers at number 4. And I'm interested in how Carolina Panther fans view the quarterback position right now. Because you had an all-time talent in Cam Newton, who I'd argue is the greatest Carolina Panther ever in terms of influence, in terms of what he was at his best versus anybody else who's ever played in this building or in this organization. Now you got Teddy Bridgewater, who I happen to like a lot, but because he's following Cam, and he's not Cam, and he's not as polarizing or as interesting, he all of a sudden gets slept on. You have Steve Smith calling him a right-now quarterback. You have Panther fans looking ahead to the draft and following things like McShay's mocks at this point. Incredibly close. And most of the reaction I'm seeing, Panther fans would prefer Justin Fields right now over the next 10 years than Teddy Bridgewater. I think the exact opposite, and here's why. Fans view the draft in a very subjective way. They view it the way a 5-year-old views Christmas. It's always quarterbacks too. You know, you look at a quarterback, you get excited, you think you got your next guy. Christmas morning comes around, you burst out of your bedroom, you go down the steps, you're in your pajamas, you're ripping open the presents. Oh my goodness, I got what I wanted. I'm so happy. And a day later, you're not playing with the toy anymore. Any parent can attest to this. The kid was so happy to get this toy, and then a day later, he's done with it. He's on to the next thing. That's the way football fans view quarterbacks. A year ago, Washington fans, we got Dwayne Haskins. This is going to be our future franchise quarterback. How you feeling now, Redskins fans? Or I guess Washington football fans? Daniel Jones, I'm not so quick to check out on him, but there were some Giant fans, even though the pick was disliked, who thought that this guy could potentially be their franchise guy. How about Josh Rosen when he was picked by Arizona way back when? Sam Darnold with the Jets, franchise changer. Baker Mayfield with the Browns, how's he being viewed right now? You know, it's great. The unknown is always more valuable or seems to be more attractive than what you know. And right now, Teddy Bridgewater, here's what I know. He's a winning quarterback. Already, he's a winning quarterback. Look at his record. He took Minnesota to the playoffs with a god-awful offensive line. Then he had a gruesome injury. The Jets picked a rookie quarterback in Darnold. Todd Bowles wanted to start him to try and save his job. That's why I'm convinced Darnold started game one over Teddy in 2018. He gets traded to the Saints. In the 5 games he played last year, 5-0 as a starter. He's 27 years old, a former first-round pick. We know he's a winning quarterback. What do you know about Justin Fields right now? What do you know him to be as a quarterback? We saw him for 1 year. We saw him 1 year at Ohio State, really good. But was he terrific? Was there a point where he ever faced anybody that had more talent than what he had? Like, what happened when he ran up against Clemson? He didn't look as great. He's throwing an interception at a key point on the sideline to Isaiah Simmons. He wasn't that sharp in that game. So the numbers are great. 41 touchdowns, 2 picks. He looked awesome. But it's just 1 year. And it's not like a Cam Newton take over the sport type season. It's not like Joe Burrow last year at LSU. That's not what we looked at. It's not the same thing. So I'm not wanting this to be an indictment on Fields, because he very well could be a great player. If the season happened this year for the Big Ten, maybe he propels himself over Trevor Lawrence. But now that there isn't a Big Ten season, it's very much looking like the next time Justin Fields is going to play in a competitive football game is a year from now. Preseason 2021. That's going to be 20 months in between time he took his last snap in a competitive game. That layoff really concerns me. No football for 20 months? Look at the way the collective bargaining works. Teams that are successful, you're winning because your quarterback's on a rookie deal. If you're going to pick someone that high, you should have confidence that at some point his rookie year, he's going to step in and play. How can you feel, other than Trevor Lawrence, any kind of way that that can happen with Justin Fields or Trey Lance, given that they both have only played 1 year at North Dakota State and Ohio State, respectively? How can you feel that way? The 20-month gap gives me great pause. Other than Lawrence, I would not draft a quarterback in the top 10. And again, you might be thinking, Josh, there's a lot of time between now and the draft. And you're absolutely right. But I don't think we're going to see Justin Fields or Trey Lance playing football. So how's the evaluation going to change? How is my thought on that going to change between now, August the 13th, and April the 13th? I don't think it is. But the last thing on the Teddy front, stop acting like this guy's 32 or 33 or 37. He's 27. He's not ancient. He's not past his prime. He's entering his prime. To put that in perspective, Jake Delhomme was 28 years old when he came from the Saints to the Panthers. Same way Teddy's going from the Saints to the Panthers. I think the worst version of Teddy Bridgewater is Jake Delhomme. And I say that as somebody who's gotten to know Jake a little bit. You're not going to find someone who's a bigger fan of Jake Delhomme and what he did with the Panthers than me. But it's more a compliment of Teddy. Him at his worst is Jake at his best. That's what it is. Teddy, he has first-round talent. Jake was an undrafted player, playing at the lesser level. He doesn't have the same command, the same arm strength. I know Teddy gets knocked for his arm strength, but if you look at the stuff at Minnesota he did, it actually suggests he has a pretty good deep ball. Teddy, he's 27 years old. That's the same age Drew Brees was when he was injured at San Diego, then being picked up as a free agent by the Saints in 2006. The Panthers, as an organization, by every metric, a better organization than New Orleans was in 2006. They were recovering from a hurricane. They almost left for San Antonio. They never make the playoffs. The Panthers, they were in the Super Bowl 5 years ago. Two in the last 15. Or make it 16 years. It's just not the same deal. You got the richest owner in the NFL. You got maybe the best running back in the sport. Tremendous weapons. Like, are we forgetting what we just saw in the Super Bowl? Like, Jimmy Garoppolo, when last season started, went into his first year as a starting quarterback. First full season. He was hurt with an ACL injury in 2018. Sat behind a Hall of Fame quarterback in New England. He had great talent around him, and he got the 49ers to the Super Bowl. They were a dominant force. They probably should have won the Super Bowl. They were up multiple possessions in the fourth quarter. They should have won the game. It's evident. Who says that Teddy Bridgewater can't be Jimmy Garoppolo? He's a year younger than him. Jimmy G's 28, Teddy's 27. I mean, where is this negative perception of Teddy coming from? I'm genuinely interested in that. 336-777-1600 on Twitter at SportsHub Triad. While we're looking at Todd McShay's mock draft, there's a chance something could happen next year that has never happened in the history of Wake Forest football. In the mock, Boogie Basham and Sage Surratt are first-round draft picks. That's never happened for the Demon Deacons. You've had, of course, first-round draft picks, Kevin Johnson. You think about Aaron Curry in the top 10. But two in the same year? It's just yet another reason Wake Forest should not fly under the radar anymore. They're going to. You're going to see the off-season polls that are put out. The media is going to vote what's going to happen in the given year. Wake Forest is going to be ranked under Florida State, even though Mike Norvell is having a number of issues with the Seminole football program, and he hasn't even coached a game yet. The Demon Deacons are going to be picked behind NC State because they're in Raleigh. It's a bigger city. Dave Doran gets more respect than Dave Clawson does. But Wake Forest, I look at them. They are one of six schools in this mock draft with multiple first-round picks. And you're not talking about any lesser Power 5 teams or Group of 5 teams represented who are doing this. Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oregon, LSU, Penn State. Those are the other schools that have multiple first-round picks, according to Todd, in his way-too-early mock draft. One for each side of the ball. It's immense talent. And speaking of Coach Clawson being underrated, I'd go as far to say he's one of the five best coaches in the ACC. If you include Brian Kelly into that mix, that's not a small feat. Like Dabo, it's hard. He's unassailable given the recruiting of Clemson and the national championships of late. Mack Brown, he is an active coach with the national championship. He's an active Hall of Famer. You know, he's somebody who quickly has turned around North Carolina, so I'd probably have him second. Brian Kelly, if you're at Notre Dame for as long as he's been at Notre Dame now, a couple of playoff, one playoff appearance, a national title appearance, that's not a small feat either. You're in the top three in that group. David Cutcliffe, I have so much respect for him. Tenure probably puts him fourth, considering where Duke football was when he took the job, getting them to an ACC championship game, even though they lost to Florida State. I can't speak to how big of a deal that is. But after that, I think it's Clawson. I'd take Dave Clawson as a coach over Dave Doran right now. I think Dave Doran's done a great job at NC State. Went 4-8 last year. I think they're going to bounce back with Devin Leary. And finally, a healthy offensive line, knock on wood, healthy secondary, Peyton Wilson back in the linebacking core. I think I like the weapons NC State has too. But Dave Clawson, he has to be more resourceful. He's at a private school. The academic standards, it's a lot higher. You have to recruit a certain type of kid. And he just has it humming along. After the first few years where he won six games, he's made a bowl every single year. Four straight years. He had a bowl winning streak of three seasons. And I think Wake Forest could be a lot better than people think this year. I think they always exceed expectations. But they're not going to get, I think, a lot of lofty expectations put on them, even locally, because they don't have Jamie Newman at quarterback anymore. I think that would be a mistake, given Sam Hartman last year was the one beating Florida State. He was the one starting the season in a quarterback competition with Jamie 2 years ago. Got the redshirt. He has 3 years remaining. I don't think there's going to be a lot of drop-off at quarterback. Warren Ruggiero does a great job with the quarterbacks, calling the plays. The system is proven to work, and the weapons, they're still there. It's not Scotty Washington, it's not Kendall Hinton, but it's Sade Surratt, it's Donovan Green. Weapons all over the place for the Demon Deacons. So don't overlook them. History could be made next year if Boogie Masham and Sade Surratt are taken in the first round.
Make some noise, make some noise, let's go!
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
When you hear this song, what immediately comes to mind?
St. Patrick's Day.
For some, it might be Leonardo DiCaprio shirtless in The Departed.
$3 Irish car bombs.
Darren Vaught's a Boston Red Sox fan. I hope that means he's not rooting for the Bruins in any way tonight, but he's joining us as we're doing some sharing with Darren, and in a bit, comparing with Darren. When you hear the Dropkick Murphys, what comes to mind?
Mainly 04, but DiCaprio comes up for sure, but mainly Red Sox 2004 ALCS beating the Yankees, 100%.
Canes, Bruins, 8 o'clock puck drop tonight. There's a lot going on. The Wyndham Championship in full swing. Round one at Sedgefield Country Club. We'll continue to keep you posted on that. You'll also hear from Panthers linebacker Tahir Whitehead as we had a chance to catch up with him earlier today. We'll do that in just a little bit. But Robert, it's time for some comparing with Darren. Where do you want to begin?
I'm going to start with you, Josh. I've got some good ones this week. I'm going to start with Darren, actually. That's my fault. Darren, I got some good stuff for you this week. I felt like last week not being here, I wasn't here to guide it. So I put a little more thought into this, and we're just going to start red hot, okay? You there? Are you here, Darren?
You are not ready to go.
I can feel it. We're going to have to amp you up. Stephen A. Smith saying, NBA players need companionship. The quotations are around companionship. I would like you to compare that to Ronald Reagan asking Mr. Gorbachev to tear down this wall.
I think both well-intended, right? I think one has much more catastrophic potential than the other. And it might be the one that Stephen A., our guy, is talking about.
Did you see this breaking news, by the way, that NFL Network reported? The Seattle Seahawks just cut a rookie corner who was caught on video trying to sneak a female visitor into the team hotel. This is the best part, though. The woman was wearing Seahawks gear in an attempt to disguise her as a player. It did not work.
I saw that.
Robert, how do you think that conversation goes? Like, hey, babe, we're just going to put a hoodie on you. Just look at your phone when you walk in. Don't look up.
That's exactly what they did. She wore Seahawks gear.
Is that right?
Yes, he put her in Seahawks gear to look like someone that was either with a player or a player when she walked in.
I got you one of those Nike swoops.
My question immediately becomes, was it team-issued gear that the player gave her, like, ahead of time, or maybe he told her where to go get it, like, at his place back home? Or was she wearing, like, some store brand, local to Seattle, generic t-shirts? Because that would have been a dead giveaway.
Like, if I'm trying to look like a Seattle Seahawks player, I'm going with the hooded sweatshirt, I'm looking down at my phone, probably going to have some pajama pants on.
Or sweatpants,
Or sweatpants. Have, like, long socks, and I specify the socks because you're going to have, like, the sandals that you put your foot all
slides.
The way through. The slides. Slides on.
Yep.
So if I want to look like a player, that's the way to do that. Let's get to the next comparison.
Josh, this one's right up your alley. I would like you to compare Hard Knocks to The Bachelor.
Well, both really accentuate things. I think there's clearly a production element to things. Producers are very important. Like Justin Herbert, because of, I assume, what the Chargers allowed for HBO to use, looked a lot like Joe Montana, even though he was just throwing footballs into a net. You got Anthony Lynn saying, man, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before. Has me thinking, what has Philip Rivers been doing the last few years? What does Tyrod think about this? Even though I know it's pronounced Tyrod, I'm just never going to change. Marriott, Marriott, you know the deal. The Bachelor, the same way, it's probably not reality. It's probably not as dramatic as it might seem. You never really see the alcohol consumption, but you know it's kind of there.
Yeah.
So that's the best way I could compare it. A lot of producing, a lot of blowing up thing.
I liked it.
With that in mind, if I can interject, Josh, what do you think was actually happening that inspired that quote out of Anthony Lynn? Because this happened, right? This happens. They'll just take a shot they've got of something else.
Exactly.
He probably was reacting to something different entirely.
It's got
to
be
Joey Bosa. Something Joey Bosa did. I don't know what.
He's talking about practicing in the game. Yeah, I've never seen anything like this.
Joey Bosa just did a handstand, then sacked the quarterback. I don't know how that happened.
Doing cartwheels out there. Anyway, Darren, on to you. I would like you to compare Nickelback dropping an album to the ACC's idea to play a football season.
All right, so I assume you're talking about the graphic that Nickelback dropped on its social media earlier this week.
You would be correct.
That's right.
They're doing something. They're up to something. I assume it's an album drop tomorrow. And comparing that to the ACC trying to play a football season, I'll just say this. I don't have to think either is a good idea to be excited about it.
Oh, that's good.
We are comparing with Darren Vaught from the USA Baseball Podcast, also voice of High Point Basketball. He's on Twitter, at Darren Vaught. Robert, close me out here.
Josh, I would like you to compare ECU breaking up a party that had over 400 students at it to the refs from the Hurricanes and the Bruins in Game 1?
Ooh. A lot of poor judgment.
Poor judgment.
Yeah. I think there's probably some poor explanations, too. Like, I'm sure the police probably cited a lot of these students.
For sure.
So then you're talking to your parents, who are more concerned about COVID than the 18 and 19-year-old. Well, listen, when I thought it was just going to be me and Tom and Sloan, but then I look around and there's 298 other people, or make it 398 people. You don't really know the difference after two Coors Lights.
Mom, I just stopped by to get my jacket, and then all of a sudden the cops were there. I swear I wasn't partying.
Listen, I was the designated driver. Like, and babe, I didn't make out with that girl because I was too busy reading 1 Corinthians, and I know that Jesus wouldn't do that.
Listen, I refused a breathalyzer test because how can that be sanitary if everyone's blowing into it? Come
exactly,
on.
Exactly right.
Darren, I got one last one for you, okay?
Trying to get one in under here. Right.
Okay, that's my fault. Darren, I got to stop the music for a second because I have a little visual for you to compare. I would like you to compare Jerry Jones saying fans are going to be at Cowboys games this year to this old man from Holes.
I'm tired of this, Grandpa.
That's too damn bad.
I'm tired.
I don't know if that's a visual.
The old Holes guy.
Too damn bad.
Hold on. Is he saying it's too bad?
Have you never seen Holes before? This grandpa has
I
his.
I have. I just don't.
It's when he's taking the warden out and she's having to dig all these holes and she's like, "Grandpa, I'm tired of digging all these holes." And he said, "That's too damn bad."
Too damn bad. Okay, I thought I was interpreting that correctly. Yeah, we just need that as a drop to play for Gary all the time.
I'll leave that in my hot bar
because he can plan on it. And I saw as a
well, compare it, Darren.
I'm sorry?
Dance Monkey, compare it! Compare it!
I want to use one as an answer to the other, Josh. I don't know what else you wanted to do there. I was mid-explanation, but I don't even feel like it now.
All right, then we'll just send him out there because we're out of time and it's also too damn bad. On Twitter.
No.
On Twitter at Darren Vaught. That was a nice try. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Likewise. I'll see you guys.
There you go. That is Darren Vaught. And as promised, Panthers linebacker Tahir Whitehead. See, yesterday, Jeremy Chinn, who's a fascinating rookie that the Panthers have, he mentioned that he was going to spend time with Luke Kuechly, or that he has spent some time with Luke Kuechly, picking his brain and such. Well, Tahir Whitehead is in, he's playing middle linebacker. He's the guy who's going to be playing the same position that Luke played last year. Good luck with that. He's also one of the few starting Carolina Panthers that is older than 30 years old. So, interested to see what he has this year. He has a great personality. He's a former Temple Owl. There's a connection there with him and Matt Rhule. But specifically when it comes to Luke Kuechly, this is what Tahir had to say earlier today.
I still take advantage of the fact that Luke is in the building. You know, I'm not prideful in any way, shape, or form, egotistical, and like, oh, you know, I'm not going to talk to him, you know, just because, you know, he was here and everyone loved Luke. No, I love the way Luke played, you know, like respect and more power to him because of the fact that he played the game at a high level for a long time. You know, we came in the same year and I've always admired the way he played the game from afar, the big plays, the energy he played with. So for me, you know, it's a blessing for, you know, to even still be able to pick his brain, you know, and he's a great dude. You know, he's open and always willing to sit down, break down film. You know, when he's out on the field, you know, I'll ask him what he thought about certain things or, you know, what is he looking at when he's dissecting runs or passes. And, you know, I'd be a fool not to take advantage of the fact that he's still around.
Tahir, I just wanted to follow up on that because the film study with Luke, it's become almost a thing of legend. How would you describe those film sessions, breaking down film with Luke?
Now, it's just moving forward. It's more so, it's just small talk right now as far as seeing the level of a back, seeing the formation and everything like that, and the telltale signs of what plays you're going to get, really. So no serious film sessions just yet. I still take advantage of the fact that.
Just yet, no serious film study for Tahir Whitehead. Good to catch up with him earlier today. Panthers bit a linebacker. Speaking of the Panthers, we are 1 month away from the first NFL Sunday. And the Panthers, they are supposed to be one of the worst teams in the league. And since they're supposed to be one of the worst teams in the league, I put together a list of the 10 worst teams I expect in order of how they're going to finish for 2020. I'll share that with you next on The Drive.
Everybody, listen up!
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
I can't believe this. This is insane.
We've seen a lot of low scores at the Wyndham Championship. First round action at Sedgefield. Harold Varner III, who I think is going to be the story in Greensboro this week, given that he's never won a PGA Tour event, gotten close a number of times, 11 top 10 finishes. He's from Gastonia, went to East Carolina, very likable. He's the only golfer repped by the Jordan brand, has a personal relationship with Michael Jordan. Doing it in his home state would be a really neat thing. Also for this tournament, where 7 of the last 13 champions also coincided winning their first PGA Tour event, being the champion of the Wyndham Championship. So who knows if that run will continue with Harold Varner at 8 under par, Tom Hoagie, a North Carolina native too, 8 under par too, Roger Sloan, 8 under par. So that's the leaderboard at this moment. Mark Brazel, tournament director of the Wyndham, will join us in 15 minutes. Brooks Koepka, though, is the biggest name of this field. He started early this morning. Robert was in the studio with me. We started combing the leaderboard, trying to find him, and it took a really long time until I got to tied for 105th, or make it 126th, Brooks Koepka, 2 over par 72.
More like Brooks over Slepka. He should have just stayed in bed today.
You really hate to see it. Brooks' first round, it warmed my heart when 5 or 6 days ago, he's trash-talking DJ Dustin Johnson going into the final round of the major championship, the PGA Championship at San Francisco. He's got a 7 under par. He's saying, man, I'm feeling good because none of these other golfers have won majors. Oh, I guess Dustin Johnson has, but he only has one. Smart move there by Brooks, who had to eat crow for dinner the next day because he shot a 4 over 74 to close out play. Greensboro is supposed to be a golf course. You shoot 20 under par. You're putting up these ridiculously low scores. You fine-tune things. It should be a breeze, right? Compared to Harding Park and San Fran. Not for Brooks Koepka, though. 72 in the first round. We'll see how he does tomorrow morning. Webb Simpson, he's at 4 under par. Looking at the last 13 rounds Webb has shot at the Wyndham, this is crazy. Last 13 rounds, here are the scores. 63, 64, 68, 67, 66, 68, 66, 62, 64, 65, 65, 65, and today shot a 66. Over the last decade, Robert, Webb Simpson's worst score at the Wyndham in 41 rounds is a 71, a 1 over par. That is the worst round he shot in 10 years. Maybe that's why he named one of his children Wyndham. That might explain that. I want to transition things to the NFL. Curtis Samuel, I think on offense, is going to have his role change more than any returning player on this Panthers roster. DJ Moore is going to be asked to do a lot of the same things. Taylor Moton on the offensive line, maybe taking more of a leadership role, but still being asked to hold down right tackle. Christian McCaffrey, hey, do everything, right? Curtis Samuel, I think he's going to be responsible for taking carries away from Christian McCaffrey, spelling him a bit so that the usage isn't so high, maybe looking a bit like the running back he was at Ohio State when the Panthers took him in the second round. Obviously, there's the receiving threat to this. But when I asked him earlier today about how he might be used, he was cryptic. What was noteworthy, though, he had this big smile on his face, Robert, just a huge smile whenever he was asked how he could be used in Joe Brady's offense, as if to say, man, you don't even know. You don't even know what's possible, what we have cooked up for you. Like, we have Spider X ladder where we literally pull out a ladder, I climb up the top of it, and then I jump into the end zone. You're not ready for this. That's the type of look Curtis Samuel had. Here's how the exchange sounded.
You know, with my skill set, not to talk too much about myself, but with my skill set, the ability to do so much, you know, outside, inside, and, you know, play running back. A lot of experiences playing different places, you know, in my career, you know, that definitely gives me the flexibility to do more, you know. So, you know, we practicing hard and we just looking forward to what's to come.
When Joe Brady describes your Ohio State days, he speaks from experience because he was at Penn State when you guys faced in 2016 as an assistant. I'm just curious, when you guys are talking about what your role's going to be, how does he describe it to you?
I'm not going to really go into the details, but I mean, you know, I sort of had an idea of, you know, what my role was going to be coming into the season and, you know, different things that I can do. But, you know, each and every day when we go out there on that practice field, I'm excited. Because I know it's something special. I know we're going to have a good time, you know, learning the system, going out there, running the plays, actually everybody being together, you know, just back to playing football. So I'm excited to be around the coaches, be around Joe. You know, it's going to be great.
It's pretty exciting, Robert, seeing what this Panthers offense can look like. We heard from Robbie Anderson yesterday. He's a deep threat. He's a speed guy. DJ Moore's a speed guy. Curtis Samuel's a speed guy. Is there another team in the NFL that has it like that? Like, the Chiefs have Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman, who are speed guys, but I mean, three players. Usually, it's pretty easy to indicate pre-snap if there is a big play potential where it's coming from. Okay, you got a speed guy on one side and a bigger target, maybe like a Devin Funchess, Kelvin Benjamin type on the other end. You know that's the one you need some safety help with. But if the Panthers line up with Anderson and DJ Moore on one side and Curtis Samuel on the other, I don't know what safeties do, where they're going to prioritize giving help. That's an interesting deal. There aren't a lot of teams that have three, that feel like they have three game-changing speed receivers on their roster. Okay. Every week, Robert tries to learn more about baseball. One thing you need to know today, Robert, is that the Baltimore Orioles would be in the playoffs if the season ended today.
Who the hell let those kids out?
I'm a miserable person. Like, you're talking about 3 weeks into the season, I'm looking at the standings. I get it's a sprint, not a marathon this year. That's still a miserable thing to do, but just let me have it. I'm an Orioles fan who hasn't had much, you know, happiness watching this baseball team over the last few decades. Okay. It's time for Baseball for Dummies, where I get to I allow you some airtime to ask me any question you like about the sport.
Robert doesn't know diddly squat about baseball.
Strike one!
When Robert hears strikeout, he thinks all about his failed past relationships.
Strike two!
When Robert hears breaking ball, he winces.
Oh.
Gas? Get the point?
Strike three, you're out!
While everyone else is swinging for the fences, Robert is simply trying to get on base.
Swing! Bada, swing! Swing! Bada.
This is Baseball for Dummies.
All right, Josh, last week I asked you what the most important position is in baseball. This week I want to know what the least important or most easily replaceable position is.
Because we were having that conversation about football where the easiest position to translate maybe to the pros and not be exposed might be corner. I think corner outfielder is always the place you would stash like a kid. Most kids are right-handed batters, so if you're like a little league parent, you'd put like a player at right field in the effort they're not gonna, the ball's not going to be hit their way very often. But I probably say first base. You know, first base, not a lot that can go wrong there. I'd say that's the most replaceable defensive position, first base.
My mom's always said first base is where you put the kids that are a tub of goo because they don't have to move much. Everybody's just going to throw the ball to them.
That's true.
Okay, baseball purists, I hear a lot from them whining all the time. They just sound like a bunch of whiny babies. Why, when the DH came to be a thing, why were they so upset about there being a designated hitter?
Well, just history of baseball, the pitcher hit. And there were some pitchers in baseball that were really good hitters, but now, you know, it's so specialized that the batting averages are just terrible. You have a couple that can rake, like Clayton Kershaw, he can bat. He's proven that he can get a couple good swings in there. I think Madison Bumgarner, another one that can get some swings in there. But that's mainly it. It takes away some strategic elements when it comes to having a pitcher that you can use.
What about the heavy Mets pitcher, that old guy?
Oh, Bartolo.
Can he hit?
Bartolo.
He just hit his first home run this year, right?
That was 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, he had one home run.
Daryl really Strawberry. Hit. Tell me about him.
Is that your last question?
Yeah, give me some Strawberry news.
Daryl Strawberry, kind of like Doc Gooden. I think Judd Apatow actually directed the 30 for 30 on Doc and Daryl. The Mets probably should have won more in the 80s than they did. They won in 86. Ball went through Buckner's legs. 87, 88. They probably should have won one of those years. They didn't. The Mets haven't won a World Series since then. Doc and Daryl Strawberry got into trouble with drugs. And I think since then, he's gotten better. Doc Gooden has still had his issues. But if you go back and watch Daryl Strawberry in the 80s, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who has a better, pure swing than he does. One of the best swings you'll ever see in the history of baseball.
Nice. And that is Baseball for Dummies.
The tournament director of the Wyndham Championship, Mark Brazel, is going to join the show live from Sedgefield, next on The Drive.
I'm sorry, I'm a little winded.
A lot of talk.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Updating the scoreboard or the leaderboard at the Wyndham Championship, round one, Sedgefield Country Club in Greensboro. Harold Varner III opened things red hot, shooting a 62 early afternoon, late morning. Then you had in the same pairing Tom Hoagie and Roger Sloan shooting 8 under as well. Hoagie had a chance to get the 10 under on 17, missed a putt. Parred out there, and then he bogeyed 18 to drop back to the other two. So you got a pretty good leaderboard early on, about where we were last year or most years, where you have around 8 or 9 under par through the first round of competition. Obviously, there are no fans in the gallery to keep things safe, but we go out to Sedgefield Country Club now, where we're being joined by the tournament director of the Wyndham, our good friend Mark Brazel, back on with us. I know you've been thinking about this day for a long time now. How have your expectations met reality for what today might look like without fans in the gallery?
Yeah, you know, I guess I got a little piece of it this week, you know, early on, where we didn't have anybody out here on Tuesday or Wednesday. And so I guess I was kind of ready for today. Again, I'm happy that we're having the tournament. We're able to play. There were 11 tournaments that were canceled and one was added this year, so we could have easily been one of those 11 canceled. So it's great news for us that the Wyndham Championship's going on. We've got all these great pros here. We're being seen on TV around the country and around the world. and reaching over 1.3 billion households. So there's some positive, you know, things about the tournament. But boy, I really I miss the fans and I miss our sponsors, and you know, because that's really what we do this for.
Is today less hectic or more hectic than most first rounds you experience?
I can be honest. It's got to be less hectic, I suppose. But you know, everything's new to us, so we're not in our normal patterns right now. So it's hectic in that way. I'm trying to figure out, you know, exactly what we're doing, because we have some guests out here that the PGA Tour allowed us to have, and we have some honorary observers that are getting to walk with some groups. But it's only, you know, a total of about 75 people. But we still need to, you know, keep an eye on them and make sure they're having a good time, because those are the people that actually stayed with us this year and are sponsoring the tournament, and which we really appreciate.
Mark Brazel, tournament director of the Wyndham Championship, on Twitter at Wyndham TD on Sports Hub Triad. Paint the picture for me. You're talking about what things are different and things you have to worry about that are different. What are some of the clubhouse protocols? What exactly does it look like in there?
Yeah, so we have this thing called the bubble, and you've heard about the bubble at in NBA, now PGA Tour, probably NHL and MLB. So basically, it's a group of us that are tested, and with the nasal swab and by you know, a company that's been doing all the testing this week through the PGA Tour. And you know, you have to wait hour and a half for your results, and you which is not bad. And then you're able to come back out here to the golf course. But and then really only people that have been the only people that are really allowed in the clubhouse, which we used to have sponsors and a lot of people could get in the clubhouse, but the only ones that are allowed now are the players and then a few of us on the staff. There's really no one else allowed in the clubhouse. And then so the rest is really just kind of grounds. And, you know, if people have to seek shelter, they kind of have to go to their cars. And so it's a, you know, it's an interesting situation out here. But we're doing everything we can to make everybody feel safe and secure and healthy. And so, you know, that's the number one priority with this golf tournament, is making sure everybody is safe and healthy.
When people ask me why I get into sports radio, at first I tell them I get into it because I love sports. And I can imagine, first and foremost, doing what you do, it comes from a love of golf. But most times when we talk during the tournament and I'm telling you what happens when we're at Margaritaville in normal years, you're saying things are so hectic and crazy, I don't even get a chance to watch any of the golf. Have you had a chance to watch any today?
I did. I get to watch a little bit this time. I mean, I've been pretty busy the last couple of days, but that's a good thing. And but I've gotten to see a little golf, not a ton, but I'm hoping to the next couple of days, and no doubt about it.
You've been pleased with the way the course is playing?
You know, the golf course is perfect. I'm pleased to say, and the new practice facility is, the players are loving it. They're tweeting about it. They're, you know, putting a lot of social media about it. But everybody I've talked to, you know, from Brooks and Davis and Graham McDowell and as many players I've spoken to, Justin Rose, they just love the golf course. They feel like this is one of the best golf courses on the PGA Tour. I think that Webb Simpson actually might have said today that this is his favorite golf course on tour. And, you know, he certainly shows it the way he plays out here. And, you know, we've had great, great reviews and comments from the players and the caddies about the golf course.
So what are some of the things? Let's look big picture, because anytime you're in a leadership position like you are with the Wyndham Championship, you obviously have to look at things in more of the macro view. 2021, 2022, with the way that the schedule lies, what's the next step for this tournament now that you've already arrived here to 2020 and got this tournament in? As you mentioned, 11 others weren't as fortunate.
Yeah, it's a good question. first off, you just, you know, you just hope and pray that we're past all this stuff, this pandemic.
Yeah.
And that there's a vaccine, and that people are, you know, people are comfortable with the vaccination, and so that we can move on. But I would tell you that I think that, you know, our planning is going to be twofold, where we kind of plan for a little bit of a new norm. Maybe not exactly as back to the heydays of the last couple of years, but we'll take a step forward. It won't be like this year. Hopefully it'll be a little bit closer to last year, because I really felt like we were in on a great curve, and we were swinging up with our tournament, and this could have been a really big year. I think our field would have been even better than it is now if we would have been the week after the Olympics, because really the Olympics is a week off for so many players. It's really only about 15 or 16 players that you know in the Olympics, and we would have had almost everybody else. So I think that was a little crushing, but our field was great this year. It's really good. But I feel like, you know, we can get back, if we can get past all this, we can get to the other side of COVID. I feel like we can, you know, ramp back up pretty quickly.
I love reading about the history of this tournament. We're being joined by Mark Brazel, Wyndham Tournament Director here, Wyndham Championship Tournament Director. And some of the things I read, Sam Snead said Sedgefield was his favorite golf course. And you read about the trout fishing and all of that that he used to do. And you read about all the others who have won this tournament. When you're telling somebody about the history of your golf tournament, what's your favorite factoid that you love to pull out, your favorite story?
You know, you know, one just happened this week, to be honest with you. I wrote a difficult text message to Camilo Villegas about the passing of his daughter, Mia. And about 3 days later, he wrote a text to me that I read to my staff, and there wasn't a dry eye in the room. And we've dedicated, you know, this tournament to Mia. She was Camilo and Maria Villegas's 22-month-old daughter that just passed away a couple weeks ago. And so he's, you know, he last won here, and he's always been part of our family, especially after he won. But, you know, that's a really sweet moment and sad moment altogether. And he, you know, Camilo just said, you know, we've got an angel in the sky. And he said that he wants, when we think of Mia, he wants all of us to smile. And, you know, I remember other things like Davis Love winning in 2015. And here's a guy who's 52 years old at the time and second oldest ever, I think, to Snead to win a PGA Tour event. And that's his third win at the Wyndham Championship in three different decades. He won in early 90s, 92. He won in 2006, and then he won in 2015. And that he won the big tournament with Tiger in it, you know. And he and Tiger were best buddies. And they basically said, look, if I can't win it, I want you to win it. And they both basically said that to each other going out that Sunday. And then there's just been some really other really neat moments. I remember when Ernie Els took some time to spend with a couple kids who had autism, and it was like the sweetest moment I've ever seen and in sports. And Ernie took like 45 minutes with him, just talking to him. And, you know, and so there have been some really neat moments that have probably not been shared that have meant a lot to me as the tournament director. And then, you know, to see, we've been really blessed with, you know, incredible champions. I mean, from, you know, since even the last 15, 20 years, you know, from the KJ Choys and Shigeki Maruyama and Rocco Mediate over here, and then Davis and Brant Snedeker. But then we had, you know, Carl Peterson and Ryan Moore and Sergio Garcia. Snedeker wins again. Webb Simpson won. You know, so we've had Henrik Stenson. We've had a great run of champions. I mean, from the early days of Snead and Hogan and Nelson, who,
man,
you know, those guys are the top tens in the world ever to play the game. And then to Gary Player and Seve Ballesteros and Ray Floyd and Lanny Watkins. I mean, we've had an incredible list of champions. So anyway, that's just some, I've probably gone too long, but that's just some, you know, moments that I remember.
Nah, that's tremendous stuff, Mark. It's good to hear from you. We miss being out there. I know a lot of people agree in our audience. They'd love to be out there as well. Here's to praying, hoping, wearing a mask, so that way a year from now, we will be back at the tournament, hopefully back underneath a tiki hut at Margaritaville, and watching a lot of the same play, terrific play that we saw on television today. Thanks for spending the time with us.
Yeah, and I would just like to reiterate, I mean, please social distance, wash your hands, and for your other people around you, for your loved ones, wear a mask as much as you can, especially if you're indoors. Not so important outdoors if you're social distancing, but pretty much anytime indoors when you're with your friends.
Ditto. Mark.
Thanks.
Look forward to crowning a champion. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Josh.
There you go. Mate. Follow him on Twitter at WyndhamTD. It's Mark Brazel joining us from Sedgefield Country Club. It's really a personal thing, Robert. This tournament, it means so much to so many people. I know a number of people who are out of town this week because the idea of them being in town and not being able to go to Sedgefield for this tournament, just unthinkable. Just unthinkable. And having to watch it on television for some, it's just not something they're even accustomed to. We're hoping we get great play continued. We've had it so far, and we're going to crown a champion on Sunday at Sedgefield Country Club. Robert, let's keep things up to date on what's happening with the NBA bubble right now. Because Phoenix is in action right now. Memphis is in action right now. They are both tied. This is their last regular season game, or I guess last regular season bubble game, however you want to view it. They are both half a game back of the Portland Trailblazers, who play tonight against the Brooklyn Nets. The scenario is this. Memphis has a tiebreaker over the Suns. Portland, if Phoenix or Memphis win, they will be tied with Portland for the number 8 spot. Portland has an opportunity to win and clinch the 8 seed tonight. If they lose and both the Suns and Grizzlies win, they are out of the playoffs. What's going on with the Suns and the Grizzlies right now?
Right now, the Suns are up 26 points on the Mavs.
Wow.
So that 8 minutes left in the third.
Suns are going to be
a lot of time left, but still.
I want to see the Suns keep playing, but if it's an option between the Suns or the Trailblazers.
I'm choosing the Blazers.
Well, I mean, that's it, but like, gosh, the Suns doing everything they possibly could. Everything they possibly could and not getting through. Gosh, that sucks more than Dame Lillard not getting his shot in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, but I don't know. Do you really care if the Suns make it? They played great for 8 games. If you really wanted to make it, they should have played like this all year.
I mean, you could say that about any of these three.
I'm sure, but I don't care if the Suns make it or not. I care if the Blazers make it. I don't care that the Suns played great for 8 games.
I mean,
I just don't. Okay. Kelly Oubre does not do it for me like he does my girlfriend. It just doesn't do it for me.
Is that right?
Kelly Oubre is a good-looking man. Very good-looking man.
So, what's the Memphis score?
Memphis is currently up 92-69. Not nice for the Bucks.
So they're both going to win.
I would assume
Giannis
so.
Giannis is out because he headbutted people. So
save for like a Phoenix, Tracy McGrady in Houston type situation where they score.
Phoenix and Memphis are both going to win, which means it's this simple. It's either the Suns or the Blazers that are going to continue. That's it. The Grizzlies will be through because they have the tiebreaker with Phoenix. Portland wins. They're essentially going to be the 8 seed. Memphis isn't going to beat them twice. Portland has to just win once. Memphis has to beat them twice. That's not going to happen. If Portland loses, it will be Phoenix having to beat Memphis twice, which would be the more compelling scenario, but either team winning, I wouldn't give them any odds at beating the Lakers.
But when this whole bubble thing started and we had all these teams in the West who could potentially be the eighth seed, the Suns would be your last pick when this whole thing started. You'd be like, oh, Suns are never making it. I don't care about the Suns. I want the Pelicans. I want the Blazers. I want the Grizz. I don't care. Just no Suns.
The NCAA president, Mark Emmert, just said that fall sports championships have been canceled. So the Olympic sports are just going to be competing for ACC titles this year. That has no bearing on the college football playoff, which isn't an NCAA sanctioned event, but would, say, for other levels of football. So I'm interested in what he thinks on other subjects, though. It seems to me, according to Dan Wolkin, he's officially embracing a bubble of sorts. Looking at that for the spring, looking at that maybe for the NCAA tournament. So that is the NCAA's major event, and that is the breaking news coming down there, keeping you up to date on what's happening in the NBA and college sports. Robert, what do we got in Ticket to the House today?
I want to buy me a boat.
Hashtag buy the boat. Let's take it to the house next.